This is ATCCommunication.com audio podcast number 7.
Bravo Delta maintain 140 knots or greater space.
140 or greater. We got it.
Delta 473, contact 1, approach 128.0.
28 nothing, Delta 473.
Eagle 5, 4664, cross the 38, maintain 14,000, final altimeter 3025, did best you can.
25, 30 at 14,000.
And I'm your host, Jeff Canarish, and today we're talking to an air traffic controller named MT, which is not his real name. We're going to use an identity of MT so he can remain anonymous and feel free to talk about whatever he cares to talk about. That's good for you. It's good for me. Hey, MT, how are you doing?
Hey, great, Jeff. I really like what you're doing with your website, and I appreciate you inviting me to join in.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Let's begin by talking just a little bit about your background as an air traffic controller. How many years have you been doing it? Where did you get most of your experience and so forth?
Well, I've had 31 years as a government employee, and right out of high school, I joined the Air Force and did a lot of ground control of intercepts in the Montana with the Air National Guard and also active Air Force and a little bit of the Canadian Air Force. And then I got hired by the FAA and spent 27 years in center.
Mm-hmm. In Air Traffic Control Center and Route Center.
That's right.
Okay. So what is the training like? How long, from the time you're accepted in the training program, how long are you in school? What type of on-the-job training do you have, et cetera?
Once you get hired, you would report to Oklahoma City, and that's about it's 3 to 4 months long, and then you would report to your facility. You would go through training for approximately 2.5 to 3 years to be what we call CPC, or a Certified Professional Controller. Now, that is at an en route center. It would be a little bit less for, say, a VFR tower or even a smaller TRACON.
Mm-hmm. You know, we pilots, we have annual evaluations, or for in the airline business and in the civilian world, you have biennial evaluations. Do you have recurrent evaluations as an air traffic controller after you become certified?
Yes, sir. We have every 6 months we go through a technical training discussions to review our performance over the past 6 months. Of course, our jobs are evaluated and recorded every single second that you plug in. It's recorded, so you can be evaluated at any time. We have remote observations and also direct observations, but it's culminated into usually a 6 months at a time.
Well, you've seen quite a bit in your time, so let's get into something that is probably near and dear to the hearts of the people listening into this broadcast. Today, let's talk about air traffic control as a service to pilots flying VFR. To begin with, what is an air traffic controller's primary responsibility overall?
Well, the first responsibility or first priority is to separate the aircraft and issue the safety alerts. And notice that I didn't say IFR or VFR. It includes both. People on that airplane, we are concerned whether or not they're IFR or VFR. After all that, it's really all about judgment, what you need to do and prioritize the things that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm an IFR pilot, I pretty much have no choice but to plug myself into the system. That's not the case if I'm going to go fly VFR. And if the FARs allow me to take off from an uncontrolled airport, cruise outside of controlled airspace, and land at an uncontrolled airport so I never have to even talk to an air traffic controller, why should I bother calling ATC for VFR flight following, for example? What really can ATC do for me as a pilot that I can't do by myself?
Jeff, you talked about the big sky theory, and that is so relevant to what we're talking about. When you get in your car, you at night, you don't drive with the lights off, and ATC can provide you with a little bit of vision outside of just your normal eyeballs. ATC really has a God's eye view of what you need to see. If you have any trouble, we already have the basic information that we don't need to go through. Say if you have engine trouble or something like that, well, we have the basic information. We know where you are. We know what frequency. We know where the airports that you may or may not be able to land at, And we've already passed that information portion of that transmission, and we can get right straight to the problem instead of wasting time trying to figure out what your call sign is, where you're located, what's your altitude. We can get you on the right path to either landing safely or giving you any assistance that we need.
So you're basically, you're there as a backup, you know, which is kind of a different way of looking at things. I mean, I know a lot of guys are almost intimidated by talking to air traffic controllers, and they figure, well, why bother anyways? But really, it's just another layer of safety, and it sounds like a pretty good idea. But let me ask you this, and I'm really playing devil's advocate here when I ask you this question. Let's say I'm a pilot flying VFR, and I feel like once I've contacted ATC for VFR flight following, now I'm really limited kind of in what I can do. I've plugged myself into the system, so it kind of limits where I can go and what I can do. Isn't that true? Will you, as an air traffic controller, for instance, stop me from changing altitudes or flying where I want to fly?
Oh, no, absolutely not. But we do would like an advisory if you want to change the altitude, because it's more like a courtesy call. If you are at 7,500 and you have the winds that are more favorable at 9,500, I want to know that you're going to climb just me by surprise. We do have the conflict alert will go off if there's traffic in the other area, but also we want to advise you that maybe a military operating area is involved in that, and I certainly don't want you going up and flying around with the F-16s, that's for sure. So we just advise you of the potential trouble and or other traffic. It's an advisory call.
So again, you're not really in a directive role, in more of a support role here, and the pilot's still free to maneuver as he wants to flying under VFR, correct?
Absolutely. All right. Absolutely.
Well, let's take this a step further now. Let's say I'm not just a pilot flying under VFR, but I'm a student pilot. I'm very low time, and I'm really nervous about talking to air traffic control. Do you handle student pilots any differently than a pilot who doesn't identify himself as a student?
I have a little bit more patience with a student pilot, especially if he's going to make sure and advise me right at the front. I don't want to treat him any differently than I do another pilot, but I'm going to be more patient. I don't want to spit out a clearance so fast that he can't get it, because I'm only going to have to repeat that. I want the VFR pilots to make sure and to get it right. It does neither one of us any good to just hurry through something and not provide that kind of safety. I encourage every VFR pilot, whether he's student or an experienced pilot, to make sure and get flight following. Because if you have any trouble down the road, we've got your basic information, and we can go directly to the problem that you're having.
Continuing on with this whole idea of air traffic control as a service, let's say I'm doing a good job of maintaining VFR separation from the clouds, but for whatever reason, I find the weather's deteriorating out around me. Say the visibility is going down, or I find myself above a cloud layer and cannot descend to my destination airport because I'm not IFR rated. And to make matters worse, fuel is running low. I'm kind of painted myself in a corner. What can you do at that point to help? Do you have any examples of that?
Okay, aircraft checks on to my frequency, and I could tell that English was not his first language, so the communication barrier was going to be a little bit limited from the get-go. So that piqued my attention quite a bit, and what had happened was that he was southbound, and off the coast was a scud layer that eventually continued northbound and covered his destination. Well, he's about 15 miles away from his destination, and he says, I have clouds at my destination, and this is my first cross-country trip. And I said, well, is it clear behind you? He says, affirmative. Well, just turn around. And so the aircraft turned around, and we had no problems whatsoever. The one point that I want to make out of that is that when you're already talking, so this aircraft was already talking to Fort Worth Center, and I had all the information, and I could provide a solution within just a minute rather than this guy calling up, trying to get all that information out while he's in a panic state, and therefore the transition from really the problem to the solution was almost instantaneous. We have a lot of resources to help out, and that's all dependent on the situation. So all the supervisors in the area have access to the internet, and all the National Weather Service information and satellite pictures, they are displayed on a 60-inch flat screen that we have. We can change the products up there. We can get visual satellite imagery. We can put up NEXRAD. We can put up lightning strikes. There's just a whole wide variety of information that we can pull up. The next probably thing that we would do would be to get other pilot reports, say VFR, known VFR conditions. Well, I'm going to vector you towards those known VFR conditions by other pilot reports, not only from my sector, but my surrounding sectors also. So we have probably, and I was asked this question the other day, we have probably about 10 to 15% of air traffic controllers in a center that are IFR rated pilots. So there's another resource that we can take.
Let's wrap up by talking about the pilot-controller relationship, kind of summarize everything that we've talked about today. And you could do a much better job of this than I can, MT. Why should I feel free to contact an air traffic controller for help? Why shouldn't I be intimidated to talk to an air traffic controller who is, after all, a representative of the FAA?
Well, hopefully that some of this podcast will break down some of those barriers. I have just as much apprehension when I first started talking on the radio as probably some of your new pilots would have talking on the radio to air traffic control. We just are able to practice it a little bit more, and that's why I think that your simulator will help out quite a bit. I feel like it's one way is that train like you fight and fight like you train. So whenever you can practice that as much as possible, it's all for the better. Why should I feel free to contact an air traffic controller for help? That's what we get paid to do. You pay for that service. It is out there for you, and I would feel better if you contact the centers or any ATC facility to make sure that you get the service that you deserve.
Well, MT, I sure do appreciate your time. I'd like to get back to you with you another time to talk perhaps about the mechanics of flight following. Would that be all right with you?
Yes, and I think one of the next subjects that we might even explore is when a lost pilot contacts you, what kind of help that I can give to a lost pilot.
Okay, great. Well, we'll be sure to cover all that. And we'll also cover questions sent in by our listeners. So by all means, if you listen to this podcast and it raises some questions or you have some comments to make, feel free to contact us at jeff@atccommunication.com. I am Jeff Knarish. This has been Audio Podcast number 7. Thank you for listening. Be well and fly safe.